Late great baseball great Lou Gehrig, who played with the New York Yankees, retired from baseball in 1939. He died in 1941 of what we now call Lou Gehrig's disease, a disorder, of course, that affected the spinal cord and the cells in his brain. He was 37 years old. In the movie The Pride of the Yankees, played by Gary Cooper, Gary reenacted the original Lou Gehrig retirement speech.
I have been walking on ball fields for 16 years, and I've never received anything but kindness and encouragement from you fans. I have had the great honor to have played with these great veteran ball players on my left, Murderer's Row, our championship team of 1927. I have had the further honor of living with and playing with these men on my right, the Bronx Bombers, the Yankees of today. I have been given fame, an undeserved praise by the boys up there behind the wire in the press box.
My friends, the sports writer.
I have worked under the two greatest managers of all time, Miller Huggins and Joe McCarthy. I have a mother and father who fought to give me help
and a solid background in my youth.
I have a wife, a companion for life,
who has shown me more courage than I ever knew.
People all say that I've had a bad break, but today, I consider myself the luckiest man on the face of the earth.
So you might be wondering, okay, why is he playing this clip of Lou Gehrig in the move from the movie The Pride of the Yankees? Well, in a moment, you'll find out. The boy who knew too much. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. If you can get to our website, coasttocoastam.com, take a look at the pictures that our guest Kathy Bird has sent us, because they're going to make a lot of sense when you hear this incredible story. Let me tell you about the guest. Kathy Bird, of course, is a real estate broker and mother of a couple children who never aspired to becoming a writer until her little two-year-old son began sharing memories of being a baseball player in the 1920s and 30s. A Southern California native, Kathy received her BA from UCLA, MBA from Pepperdine University. And prior to becoming a realtor, Kathy had an exciting 10-year career in sports marketing, working for the World Cup, the Olympic Torch Relay Organizing Committees, vice president of the Magic Johnson Foundation. Now the most likely place to find Kathy in her free time is at a youth baseball game, and that makes a lot of sense. Kathy, what an incredible story. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, George.
The boy who knew too much. How old is the little guy now?
He's now 8 years old.
Okay, so he's getting there now. When, yeah. What an unbelievable story. And again, folks, get up to our website. Look at the pictures that Kathy has sent us, that Lex has posted, because they're very apropos for what we're going to talk about. Let's go back to your story. So the little one was born. His first name is Christian. Tell us a little bit about what he started doing, which made you, Kathy, just simply say, there's something going on here.
Okay, so our son had an affinity, we'll call it, for baseball since the time that he could first walk. And that in itself was kind of unique because our family is not a baseball family, and he just happened to see kids playing in the street and begged me to go to a baseball game, around the age of two, and became obsessed with it where he wore a uniform every single day. He played for hours on end. And so I uploaded a video of him playing baseball, and ironically, it was spotted by a casting director for Adam Sandler, and he was cast in a movie called That's My Boy for a baseball-playing cameo role in a movie. So he was 2 years old when that happened, and that trip brought us to Boston, Massachusetts, where they filmed the movie. And while we were there, was kind of the first indication that I got that something strange was going on. I took him to a baseball game. The Yankees happened to be playing the Red Sox while we were there. And he had only been to two baseball games up to that point. I'd taken him to two Dodger games. He did not watch television. He was a very unique kid in that he just didn't have any interest in television, even though his sister was loved cartoons and television since she was very young. So when we were there, we happened to be at the stadium, and he saw a big picture of Babe Ruth there and got visibly upset. Like, he was mad at a really strange
moment. We'll explain why in a moment, but go ahead.
At the time, I didn't even really know who Babe Ruth was, other than his image looks familiar, right, because he's kind of a part of pop culture. But my son stopped. He had his little bat. He wore his uniform that he wore every single day with real baseball pants, high socks, cleats. He wore it to preschool, everywhere. He went to church, everywhere. He saw this big picture of Babe Ruth and got so upset, he started waving his bat and said, "Mommy, I don't like him. He was mean to me." And it was so embarrassing because people were walking by. They saw what he was doing. And one person even commented, "Wow, that kid's onto something, because Babe Ruth was a real jerk."
And especially to the baseball player we're going to talk about in a moment.
Right. But at the time, I knew nothing of this. So it was just an odd thing. We shot the movie. It was a great experience with Adam Sandler. I have a video of Adam Sandler holding Christian and saying, "Hey, buddy, you know, are you going to get me tickets once you're a professional player? And what team are you going to play for?" And Adam says, "Oh, you're going to play for the Dodgers." And Christian shakes his head and says, "No, I play Yankees." Which was funny because, you know, his first contact with the Yankees was there.
Yeah.
Yeah, but when we came back is when he really started saying things that caught my attention. The first thing that happened, I was playing baseball with him one day in the kitchen. He used to play baseball inside of our house, outside of our house. Constantly.
What kind of a ball did you use in the kitchen? I hope it was a wiffle ball, right?
It was a little foam ball, and we actually have, he has quite a following on YouTube. So he has now 15 million views on YouTube.
15 million?
15 million. So he has one video where he plays baseball inside of our house, and I think just that one video has like 4 million views. So you could check it out and see how he does it, but it's quite... He spent so many hours a day doing it that he really perfected it.
How do you find him on YouTube, by the way?
Okay, so if you just Google, my favorite video is one that the Dodgers did. It's a documentary that they did when he was about 5 years old that follows his adventures from the age of two. Later, he went on to throw a first pitch for the Dodgers that became kind of iconic, and the photograph of him throwing the first pitch.
Did he even get it to the diamond there, to the base?
He did. This happened right after his fourth birthday, like a couple weeks after he turned four. And Clayton Kershaw, who's the pitcher for the Dodgers, actually set it up because he met Christian and saw him pitch and said, "You got to let this kid throw a pitch." So he did it, and it bounced once, but he got a big...
But he got it there.
Big reaction, and the picture of his first pitch now hangs in the Dodgers owner's suite. It's in the Stadium Club restaurant.
Oh, cool.
And Sandy Koufax has one in his house. So Sandy Koufax is one of the greatest left-handed pitchers
That's
of all
right.
time.
Oh, yes. Remember him as a kid growing up.
Yeah.
Along with Don Drysdale.
Aww.
Both of
wonderful.
Them.
Wonderful.
So with the little guy, with Christian, so you're beginning to notice at this point that there's something really special about this and unusual, right?
Yeah, very unusual. And he got more specific. When we got home, he started saying, "Mommy, I used to be a tall baseball player. I was a tall baseball player." And I would say, "Yeah, honey, you're going to be a tall baseball player someday." Like we do as parents, we correct the semantics and try to teach them how to speak English, right? And one day, when we were playing baseball in the kitchen, he got so upset. He said, "No, Mommy, I was a tall baseball player. I was tall like Daddy." I stopped what I was doing, and I got down to his eye level and said, "You were tall like Daddy? You know, you were a grown-up?" And he said, "Yes, like finally you get it." So I didn't quite know how to take this.
Yeah. At this point, it hasn't hit you yet, has it?
It hasn't hit me. It hasn't hit me. And then gradually, over time, he got into this habit, which I found out later is very common of children who recall past lives, because there are patterns of how these memories come out, and it's generally between the ages of 2 to 6, and then the memories dissipate, and the children sometimes don't even remember what they said. In Christian's case, he does remember the things that he said, and he still has quite an affection for Lou Gehrig. But what happened then was he said a few things that really, really, really got me listening. You know, we were in an elevator one day at a car dealership in Calabasas, going to a little party there, and we were in an elevator. And Christian looked around the elevator and he said, "Hey, Mommy, this elevator kind of looks like a hotel." And I said, "Yeah, you know what? It does look like it. It does." And he said, "When I was a tall baseball player, when I was tall like Daddy, I used to stay in hotels almost every night."
Wow. It was the life of a baseball player.
It was crazy because this kid was just turned 3. He'd never watched TV. He'd never been exposed to anything that would lead him to believe that baseball players stay in hotels. And I honestly can't tell you, even at the age of 8, I don't think he would know that baseball players stay in hotels almost
every night. Kathy, did he have nightmares as a little person?
You know what? He didn't really have nightmares, but he dreamt about baseball a lot. Like, he would sit up in bed and say, "Fly ball over here." You know, like, he was constantly on his mind. Like, he was playing baseball.
At what point did you, and obviously for people who heard the opening of this program, they're beginning to put two and two together who this person might have been, this baseball player that he's talking about. But at what point did you finally say to yourself, there's something very supernatural happening here? This could be reincarnation. It could be, you know, recollection of a past life. But there's something going on. What was that catalyst that made you say that?
You know what? It really was that comment in the elevator, because then, you know, once he said, "Oh, I used to stay in hotels almost every night," I just wanted to keep the dialogue going. Right?
Okay.
He said, "Oh, did you fly on airplanes?" And he said, "No, mostly trains."
And that's like, what they did in those days.
And I didn't know this, right? So I didn't know anything about baseball history. I didn't know much about life in the early 1900s, which was apparently the time that he was speaking about. And what happened is I would start to research these things. Like, I got home that night and I Googled Babe Ruth trains. And sure enough, comes up, Babe Ruth traveled on trains. So then I thought, this is all getting very coincidental, right? Then he had a habit. This is what he did, was at night before bed is when he would talk about it. It was always when he was drowsy, like when he had just woken up.
Kind of a different state of mind.
It is a different state of mind. Even in the elevator, he was actually sleeping in the car, and I carried him to the elevator, and then he stood up and then got in the elevator, and those words came out. So I would say every time that he said something, it was kind of in that theta state where you're half awake.
Well, and you know a kid at that age is not pulling your leg. This is really happening to him. Were you concerned at all about his health or anything like that?
Right. Well, you know, I was concerned what I did is I reached out to Carol Bowman.
No, Carol. She,
do you know Carol?
Great person.
Okay.
Yeah.
She's been incredibly helpful, as has Dr. Tucker at the University of Virginia. But Carol Bowman was the first person I reached out to. And I explained to her what was going on, and she was the one who encouraged me to ask him open-ended questions, not to lead him into answers, but just to, you know, get him to try to start talking about it, mostly at night before bed. And she suggested that I show him some photos from that era when Babe Ruth played. And that's kind of how it came about that he's saw pictures. What I said is, I said, "Do you see anybody in this picture?" I think I gave you guys a picture of the Yankees 1927 team.
Yeah.
And so one of the first things I did after I talked to Carol was showed him that team photo, and I said, "Do you see anyone in this picture who doesn't like Babe Ruth?" And sure enough, he pointed to Lou Gehrig in the photo.
Uh-huh.
Showed him another photo, and he pointed to Lou Gehrig again. And I didn't know who Lou Gehrig was. He was a guy with dimples, right, to me.
Yeah, I mean, if you're not in the baseball, especially in this era, you're not going to know who Lou Gehrig is. You're going to know about that disease, right?
Right.
But that's about it. You're not going to know the intricacies of his life and his argument with Babe Ruth, which they finally made up at Lou Gehrig's retirement speech.
Right.
And that was very emotional indeed. So going back to a Christian with this, and for folks who don't know who Carol Bowman is, Carol is an expert primarily in children's past lives. And she has looked at some incredible cases of a little boy who thought he was a World War II pilot from another life, and he probably was. And right. And so she gave you some pretty good advice, Kathy.
She really did. She really did. So that was her. She said, you know, show him photos, see if he starts to recognize any, you know, people, and he can tell you anything about it. And you have to remember, too, this was right after he turned three. So it was, he was still very young. And so he pointed to this player, and then he said, "That's me." You know, I didn't even ask him. He just said, "That's me." And I said, "Okay." So then again, I went to my computer after he went to bed, and I Googled Yankees 1927 dimples and figured out this was Lou Gehrig.
Now, is he asleep as we speak right now?
He is asleep.
I wonder what, has he ever heard that clip that I just played?
He has now. He has now.
Okay.
He's seen the movie Pride of the Yankees.
Did he act strange when he saw the movie?
No, because, you know, he saw it when he was older, and his past life memories had kind of faded by then, so he still feels quite an affinity to Lou Gehrig, but he doesn't walk around saying, "I was Lou Gehrig," but he still, I can't even explain it, the depth of his admiration. And
do you think he has grown out of this?
Yeah, there was a time when he was about 6 years old. There was we actually ended up going to Lou Gehrig's gravesite. We became
we've got a picture of that at coasttocoastam.com.
Yeah, gravesite when he was had just turned six. We also became quite good friends with the people who owned Lou Gehrig's home, the only home that he ever owned. And we became quite good friends with them and went to many barbecues there in the summers. And
did he seem to know his way around the house?
Yeah, you know, it was funny. When we first got there, he was out on the patio, and he said, "Mommy, this is where Babe Ruth used to smoke." And, of course, I would go research anything he said, right? And really everything that he said turned out to be.
Yeah, you were able to back that up.
Yeah, and Babe Ruth actually lived at that house for almost a year after his wife died, his first wife.
When you would tell friends or family about this case with your little boy, Christian, what did they say?
I actually didn't speak to too many people about it initially. My husband was even a huge skeptic, and he believed it, but he just wanted to get Christian to stop talking about it. His advice was, "Let's just stop talking about it. He'll forget about it." But he was so passionate about it, you know, like he would tell us things, you know, how when he was a baseball player, they only played their games during the day because there were no lights, and they wore metal cleats, but they didn't wear helmets.
Mm-hmm.
And how when he was a kid, the last time there was fire in the lights, which I didn't quite know what he meant, but then he explains to me that the lights that they used to light up the house had fire in them.
At what point did he stop or start slowing down talking about this?
You know, I would say like at about five was when he said to me one night, he said, "Mommy, I don't want to be an old guy anymore. I want to be a new guy, like Matt Kemp." You know, he got really into the Dodgers. He was meeting all the Dodgers because, you know, like Tommy Lasorda, who's the Dodgers.
Did they know this story?
They do now. They do now because a lot of them
are. But not then.
Not then. Nobody did, really. I talked to Tommy Lasorda about it once when Christian was about four, you know, and he said, "Oh, the kid's got a good imagination," you know, and I just kind of left it at that. I didn't want to go.
Did you think, where did he see a movie when he was younger? Anything that would have made him know this stuff? Did you try to see if he found anything and watched it?
I did. I traced his steps. You know, he had never really had a babysitter even other than going to preschool a couple hours a day or being with my mom. And so I really traced every step of any time he had been out of my care, too.
So, all right, stick with us, Kathy. We're going to come back and talk more, many more questions here about this incredible story about your little boy, The Boy Who Knew Too Much. Subtitle, An Astounding True Story of a Young Boy's Past Life Memory. More to come on Coast to Coast AM. And we're going to take your calls with Kathy Bird next hour, author of The Boy Who Knew Too Much about her son, her reincarnation story. Kathy, at what point did you start writing the book? During the episodes, or did you wait until it was all done? Of course, it's really never done.
Yeah, you know, I kept thinking the story was done, and it never really ended until, you know, the last day that I turned my manuscript into Hay House.
Oh, that's great. And it's a great organization, too. So they're good people.
Oh, thank you.
Okay, so while this is all going on, And do you think I have to take a little Christian to a doctor or a past life regressionist? What did you do?
You know, being a Christian, this whole reincarnation concept was something very foreign to me. And that's
sure.
Something I was raised to believe in. So the first, kind of professional person I went to was my pastor. And that didn't go so well. He basically insinuated that Christian was possessed by the spirit of a dead person.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, and that kind of led me on this whole quest to kind of research the history of religion. And you know, I uncovered the fact, I write about this in the book, too. I went into the history of religion and found out that the Roman Emperor Constantine had declared speaking about rebirth to be a sin in 325 A.D., and by 385 A.D., it was a crime punishable by death. And as you know, by the 16th century, the concept of reincarnation was completely wiped out, except
yep.
for a few mystical groups, right? So when I read about these scriptures that had been actually removed from the Bible when it was translated so that everyone would be able to have access to the scriptures, it really kind of opened my mind and gave me permission as a Christian to go down this path and just kind of release my guilt around it, because I realized this guilt that I was feeling was something that had been instilled in the Christian religion since 385 A.D. So it was quite a journey to get to that point where I could actually consider that my son was not possessed by the spirit of a dead person and that it could actually be reincarnation.
So did you take him to a regressionist?
No, I didn't.
You did not?
Okay. Yeah, I did not. I was actually leaning way more towards the scientific interpretation. That's why I really gravitated to people like Carol Bowman and Dr. Jim Tucker at the University of Virginia
yeah.
Medical School.
At no point he saw a hypnotherapist or anything like that?
You know what? He did in the very end, and the way that that came about was because I ended up doing some past life regressions. So that was something, that was probably at the very tail end of our story when he actually did.
And how old was he when he saw this person?
You know what? That's a good question. I think he was about 5 and 8.
Oh, still a little person then.
5 and a half,
okay.
Yeah. And it wasn't a typical regression.
Was it Bruce Goldberg who did it, by any chance?
No, you know who it was? It was Mira Kelly.
Okay.
And I met Mira Kelly because Wayne Dyer is actually the one who brought my story to Hay House,
yeah.
And Mira Kelly had done a regression with Wayne.
We miss Wayne.
Oh, we miss Wayne so much, but he's still with us every day.
Yeah, in his own way.
I feel him more than ever. I don't know if you know, George, that his last book that he ever wrote, it actually came out after he passed, was called Memories of Heaven, and it was all about children's past
lives, yeah.
And invisible friends and heavenly encounters. Yeah, and so I really feel like by writing my book, I'm kind of picking up the torch where Wayne left off, because this was going to be his next big message to the world, was to listen to our children and that they, you know, out of the mouths of babes comes great wisdom.
Indeed it does. So what have you learned, Kathy, from all of this? What has this convinced you of?
Well, I'd say the biggest thing that I learned is something that I think everyone struggles with, no matter what your faith is that our souls and consciousness survive the death of our bodies, and that we will be reunited with our loved ones. I think it's something that we always question, the mystery of life. But to me, the information that came through, that Christian came through with, and then later that I learned through some regressions that I did, it just really was indisputable evidence, to the point that living people who are alive today, confirmed information that came through in my regression that I could have never known. And so, you know, it confirmed to me that there is this other dimension that is so much greater than us, that really defies definition, but there's no doubt that our souls survive this earthly existence.
Are you pretty convinced that Christian was indeed the reincarnated Lou Gehrig?
You know what? It's something that Christian and I together, I never want to dismiss him, so I would never tell him, I don't believe this.
Right.
However, you know, James von Prague really helped me with this. I went to him when I was
Well, you know all the good ones.
Well, I didn't know any of them, but I do now, because I went to everybody for advice. You know, I was looking for answers, right? So I went to James and I said, James, okay, how does this work? Like, if my son really was Lou Gehrig, like, can you channel Lou Gehrig? Does that mean he wasn't Lou Gehrig? And, you know, and he said, you know what, Kathy? He was like, calm down. It's spirit. Like, it's so much bigger than us. It defies definition. And it really put my mind at peace that we don't really need to define it. I'll give you an example. There's a person, a 73-year-old man, who Lou Gehrig's mother lived with in the last 2 years of her life. And I found this man and described jewelry to him that Lou Gehrig's mother had given to his family in a regression that I did. And I described the floor plan of their house. I described the family. I said he had a sister who was 3 years younger who had short hair.
All right, Lou Gehrig's mother or Lou Gehrig's wife who was still alive?
Mother.
Okay.
And I can give you a little detail on how all this came about.
Sure.
But Christian basically was able to identify Lou Gehrig's parents in pictures. And then he immediately said, "Mommy, why weren't you there then? I like you better." And within minutes, he was telling me that I was his mother when he was Lou Gehrig.
Huh.
So that's kind of what propelled me to do the past life regressions, because I thought, well, let me go check this out. So I had 6 hours of recordings where I basically described every minute of this woman's life up until her own death and described jewelry and who I wanted to give the jewelry to. And I ended up going to Cooperstown to the Hall of Fame Museum, and I had access to all the Gehrig family documents. And had a hunch that there was this family that they were close with because the Hall of Fame was reproducing photographs to give to a family. And I went and found these people, and sure enough, they did have the jewelry I described. And this man who was 73 years old who inherited the jewelry, I'd become quite close with him. He was like a grandson to Lou Gehrig's mother. He is the one who verified everything, but he also happened to be a Methodist pastor who did not believe in reincarnation. However, he did confirm all of the details that came through in my past life regressions. And what he said, his interpretation was, this is an example of wisdom and knowledge that cannot come from rational experience, but it comes from being in the flow of the channel of God. So what he believed is that Christian was channeling Lou Gehrig, and I was channeling the mother because those two souls needed healing in their...
Well, you can't rule that out.
Right, and so I kind of leave it open-ended, and in the book, I don't definitively say that my son was Lou Gehrig, but when Christian and I are in private and we're having conversations, that is the way that we talk about it.
However, at 8 years old now, I'd have to ask you this. Does he show any signs of being a good athlete or baseball player of the kind of magnitude Lou Gehrig was, who was one of the great ones?
Yeah, he is still quite advanced for his age, and he has a lot of similarities. When he was younger, his similarities were strikingly similar, even the way he would swing the bat. He's left-handed, obviously. And he does play on a team now, one of the most competitive teams in Southern California. His team made it to the Pony World Series last summer.
What position does he play?
He plays, this is kind of odd, but he plays shortstop. He's lefty.
Lou Gehrig was a first baseman.
Yeah, and he at the younger age, shortstop's kind of the key position. So he plays shortstop and pitcher. And he and one of his teammates pitched a perfect game during their little World Series.
How about that?
Yeah.
So he's pretty good as an 8-year-old.
He's very good. And there's now a lot of other kids that have caught up with him. I mean, he had really amazing skills for his age, like at 2 and 3. It was kind of impossible, the things he was doing.
And there's a possibility of a movie?
Yeah, I was going to say that. We're having trouble now trying to find someone to play him in the movie because we've searched the internet, and it really is tough to find a kid, especially a lefty at that age with those kind of skills. I just sold the rights to my book. The book comes out on March 21st of this year, but I just sold the movie rights to 20th Century Fox.
Oh, that's great.
It's exciting. And the producer who's doing it did the movies Heaven is for Real.
Uh-huh.
And he did the movie with Jennifer Garner, Miracles from Heaven. And he's brought on the screenwriter who wrote Miracles from Heaven. And as fate would have it, I attribute this to Wayne Dyer, that he would bring me this guy who also wrote the movie Trouble with the Curve with Clint Eastwood, which is a baseball movie.
I can envision how this movie is going to start right now, Kathy. And that is, he's going to go way back to the Lou Gehrig era. Mm-hmm. He's going to show scenes of Lou playing baseball. He's going to show the retirement speech and all that, and then, boom, we flip to real life, and here we go.
I love it.
It's got to start that way.
I love it.
Now, what does Christian say these days about this? I mean, does he talk to his little friends, or is he out of it totally?
Yeah, you know, he's pretty much immersed in his everyday life as Christian Haupt. You know, he's talked about it he did a podcast recently where he talked about it. And it is harder for him to talk about it because he remembers saying these things, but he doesn't have the spontaneous recall that he had when he was little.
Why would he grow out of that? I guess that's pretty normal,
yeah,
isn't it?
All of these children, I think they attribute it to the children reaching school age where they really start having their own identity. But it's a pattern where the latest that children usually have these spontaneous recollections is about the age of 8. And for Christian, it really was like around 6 when he started to not speak about it as much.
So what do you think it was? Channeling or indeed a past life?
I would say that I lean more towards the reincarnation only because I have experienced these kind of soul memories, you know. So I feel it like now that this story's been revealed to me, I have a lot of deja vu feelings and things like that.
It's a remarkable story. It truly is. What lessons have you personally learned about this entire episode? Has it made you a different person?
You know what? It really has. It's really made me realize that. Can I share one story with you about when Dr. Tucker was at our house?
Yeah.
Explain it.
This is Dr. Jim Tucker.
Yeah, Dr. Jim Tucker, who he's the director of the Division of Perceptual Studies, and they've accumulated over the last 50 years. He and Dr. Tucker and Ian Stevenson, his predecessor, have documented 2,500 cases of children who recall past lives. So Jim Tucker came to our house when Christian was 5 and a half, and he interviewed him and kind of documented his case. And while Jim was here, he started asking Christian about dying. And he said, you know, what happened? And Christian said, my body stopped working. And out of the blue, Christian said something he'd never said to me before. And he said, well, I picked her to be my mommy, and then she got old. And then Jim Tucker said, well, when did you pick her? And he said, when she was born. And then he said, and where were you when you picked her? And he said, in the sky. And I started to think Christian was making the whole thing up. And then Dr. Tucker told me that many of these children, the majority of these children that recall past lives, also recall choosing their parents and have real specific details around where they were when they picked their parents. So that's kind of what inspired me to do the past life regressions. And while I did the regressions, one of the messages that came through at the very end of the regressions, it's really interesting, I did it with a man named Jerome DeWitt of Source Energy Therapy. And what he does is at the end, he has you speak with your higher self. And before you do this, you come in with a list of questions that you want to ask your higher self. And one of the questions he asked me was to speak to the subconscious of Kathy, right? He says, what was the purpose of you and Christian being reunited in this lifetime? And I said, for healing and to relive the good times.
Now that happens a lot, by the way. I'm told that in past lives that your relationships with people in your current life, it's pretty predominant. It happens a lot.
Frequently, right? I think that we long to be reconnected. And the thing that really got me was when it said to relive the good times, it really hit me that, you know, let's say that we do choose this life and we say, okay, I'm going to go back in. And I have my personal feeling is that when we're in spirit form, we don't have these earthly pleasures, like the simple things like swimming in the ocean, eating an ice cream cone, holding the hand of a child. Like these are physical pleasures, right? That when you're in spirit form, you kind of long for that. And so what it really made me do was say, you know what, everything is perfect and as it's meant to be, and we really are here to enjoy this experience and that life is really a game and we need to just love other people. And really the message that I came away with is all that truly matters in this lifetime is the difference we make in the lives of others.
Were you a believer in life after death prior to this happening?
I was. And there were books like Heaven is for Real that confirm that for me because I do believe that out of the mouths of babes, these pure and innocent things come through. So I would read things, but I believe once things happen to you personally where there's just no denying, right? And I hope that our story can do what Heaven is for Real did for people, like really give them faith and hope and feel that connection, and especially people who are grieving the loss of a loved one. I feel like our story can really give people hope that they will be reunited and that person is always there looking out for them.
Well, it's truly remarkable. In a couple minutes that we have left, Kathy, before the top of the hour, then we'll take phone calls with you next hour. What have the skeptics said to you? I mean, do you argue with them? What do you say?
You know what?
You don't sound like a person who would get into a fight with somebody.
I don't, and that's why I really don't want to violate people's beliefs, and that's probably the most important thing to me in writing this book. I really just told our story, and I just revealed these evidentiary moments in chronological order as I experience them, and I do not hit the reader over the head with what to believe. Like, everyone's going to come to this book with their own beliefs, and I really want to allow people to do that. And if people are skeptical, I'm the biggest skeptic of all, and you'll see that from page one of my book. Like, I'm constantly looking, you know, even after my regressions, I was still questioning until I actually found that jewelry and those people, and I said, okay, now I get it. This is all real. But I do not fault skeptics, and I love this quote about, for those who believe, no proof is necessary, and for those who don't, no amount of proof will ever suffice. And I get that because I was a skeptic.
Well, and it's normal to be a skeptic with things like this.
Yeah, absolutely. And if we just accept everything blindly, I mean, that's not what life's about, right? We're here to come up with our own beliefs. I love Wayne Dyer has the best saying that he used quite often, Mark Twain's quote that says, "It ain't what you don't know that gets you into trouble. It's what you know for sure.
It's
that
what you know.
True.
Yeah, absolutely. And how is the little guy Christian's attitude these days?
Yeah, he's
happy little kid.
He's a happy little kid. He loves his friends. He loves playing baseball. He plays baseball.
What's he in, third or fourth?
5 days a week.
Third or fourth grade.
Second grade. He also plays basketball now. He loves basketball and soccer. So he's just a normal kid.
Is he going to be tall?
He's pretty tall. He's a big kid. Yeah, his dad's 6'4", and my father's 6'4".
And I think Lou Gehrig was about 6, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was maybe 6'1", 6'2", which was big at that time, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So in terms of these mysteries that we all experience, what would you say to people, not necessarily skeptics, but what would you say to people about what it might be? What is the other side?
What is the other side? I think we all have that ability to tap into the other side. And I truly believe that meditation is kind of a gateway to the divine, whether it's meditation, prayer. For some people, it might be running, exercise. But there are ways for all of us to tap into that and really seek out that divine guidance, you know, like that inner callings and just like that guidance that we get. Every once in a while something will pop into your head and you just know that thought didn't come from you. But I believe that we all have that ability.
All right, we're going to come back and take phone calls next on Coast to Coast AM.